Thanks for listening to Last Call Confessions. This podcast is intended for adult audiences, and there may be language or references that some listeners may find disturbing. Guest views are their own and not necessarily reflective of the Last Call Confessions team. Discretion is advised. Today on Last Call Confessions, we're switching things up a bit. I'm one of your hosts, Austin Rieger, and today, Dave Werner and I sit down with two of Calgary's local industry legends, Rob Swiderski and Darcy Chalifoux. Rob and Darcy, welcome. Thanks for coming on the show. I'm sure our listeners would love to hear a bit about each of you and your background, so take it away.
Yeah, my name's Rob Swiderski. I was in the hospitality industry for 20 plus years. I had the opportunity to work with Penny Lane Entertainment for the start of that career, lasted 13 years there. Left to do a Canadian-based health and wellness company, and then jumped back in into a company, craft beer market, that PJ LaRue and I started 11 years ago, and just once again recently left, had a epiphany and decided that it was time for me to create a legacy for myself, once again based in the health and wellness industry, getting into the mushroom industry. So.
Hey everyone, my name is Darcy Chalifoux. I'm so happy to be here. I worked in the hospitality industry ever since I was 18. So that would be what, 28 years ago. 40. Man, I started as a busboy at a little nightclub in Northeast Edmonton called Boca's Beach Club. And from there I had, somewhere along the lines, I met Dave Werner. I think we both got thrown out of the same bars at one point. And we ended up working for the same company, managing together. And I think that started about 21. And then from there, Rob's flexing his tits right now. This is wonderful. So some things have never changed. Moved to Calgary, worked for the hospitality industry for the PLE group for years, off and on. And I don't know. It's all sort of a blur to me, I guess. But I've pretty much done everything from busing, bartending, managing, sales and marketing, you name it. So somehow I'm still alive. So
awesome.
Testament to good genes or some really good luck. One of the two.
Well, Darcy, I want to know, how did you and Rob first meet? And was it bromance at first sight, or how did the friendship start?
I don't even remember. He just showed up in my life one day. I moved to Calgary to work at Cowboys. I had convinced the owners of Cowboys that I needed to work there to take the sales job, I think. And then I walked in, and I don't know if Rob was wearing disco pants or see-through pants at the time, or if he had a shirt off. I don't really know. It was one of those things.
No pants.
Remember Rob? I don't really remember. I just know that we sort of clicked, and it was dangerous.
Let's just say, before we get too deep into this interview, that we've made a lot of life choices in the past that don't reflect on where we are these days, but I'm not proud of the route that I took, but it's made us the people that we are today. So we're able to talk to these and to these points in the past and have a good laugh about that. But yeah, it's made us the people that we are today. Darcy, you moved. We had met a couple times when I came up to Edmonton and through the organization, and then you ended up coming down and working with me at Cowboys. So
this is what I remember. So I literally just got to Calgary, hopped out of my car. I was super excited. I got a speeding ticket coming down to town, and the cop that pulled me over, I told him I was late for my first shift at Cowboys, and he started laughing and he let me off the bloody ticket. And that was a really, really bad idea. I was just close to Calgary, and I started to get this taste as to what things were really like down in the Wild West. I walked into this club, and there's these two managers standing there, and they're both carrying briefcases. I thought I had just hit, I didn't know what the hell was going on. These guys were taking things really, really seriously. That was the end of the seriousness. No, I think the briefcases were sort of an act. And from there, we just had a blast. I was a buck 75 when I moved there, 175 pounds soaking wet. Within a few months, probably over 200 pounds, eating Wheaties, you know, chicken and rice, right, Rob?
That's right. Ultimate orange.
After myself, looking like swollen orange, actually.
Yeah, so, Mega Mass 2000.
Hey, you guys, Dave here, just checking in. Is that the secret to your guys' success, chicken and rice?
Absolutely. Yeah, lean eating.
Naps. I'm telling you right now, when you get to my age, naps are everything. Anyone that argues has completely not tried it. That's the secret to life. A daily nap of an hour or so and life is good.
Bunch of beauties here. Rob, the three of us have got a ton of stories together that we've shared over the years. If you had to pick a couple of those stories or your favorite adventures, can you narrow it down? What would they be? Because there are just so many out there. And most are probably locked in that tickle trunk.
Yeah, it's, you know, Darcy and I had an opportunity to talk briefly before coming on the show. And the one that stands out the most to me with Darcy was, I'll just get right into the story. There was, I think it was, what was a Saturday night. We had closed down the drink at the time and proceeded to, we hit up a couple after hours and then ended up back at the drink. And we pulled a table out up onto the rooftop. It was myself, Darcy, Mano, and Fun Bobby. And we pulled this table up on the rooftop and we were playing poker up on the rooftop of the drink at the time and having some drinks up there. And at one point, I think it was Darcy that said, was it you, Darcy, that said, you know, wouldn't it be cool right now if we were on the water slides at Sylvan Lake? I looked at it, we all looked at each other. We're like, let's do it. So we grabbed a garbage pail, loaded it up with revs, filled it up with ice, threw it into my Jeep at the time. We all jumped into this Jeep without the top on. It was a beautiful day out. And we proceeded to drive up to Sylvan Lake to hit the water slides. And we ended up stopping in at my sister's place because she lived in Sylvan Lake at the time, knocking on her door. And I think it was probably, Darcy, what was it, like 10 a.m.?
You're giving ourselves too much credit. It was 8.
It was like 8. Okay. So it was about 8 a.m. and we knocked on her door and she was like, what the hell are you guys doing here? And we had on a bunch of different outfits that we pulled. I think there were some server tops from the drink at the time, sunglasses. And she walked out with a mug of Jack Daniels for each of us. She said, I think you guys need this. We took that shot. And then we proceeded to the Sylvan Lake water slides. But on our way there, we all looked at each other. We don't have any bathing suits. So we went to, I don't know, it was like a local sand store in Sylvan Lake at the time. And I said, okay, here's the deal. We're going to go in there. We're going to pick each other's bathing suits out. So we proceeded inside of the store and you three went running off into the men's section. You were talking about, I'm going to get like a funny pair of fish ones and stuff. Well, I headed to the ladies section and I proceeded to pick out bikinis. So I thought, oh, this is going to be awesome. They're going to pick out something for me. I'm going to pick out. Well, when they saw me doing that, they came over to the section and wouldn't you know it, there are a bunch of Budweiser bikinis. And Labatt being such a great partner of ours at the time with Penny Lane, we all decided to sport Budweiser bikinis. So we all headed back out to the Jeep. We headed over to the water slides. We parked and we got changed in the just outside the Jeep, I'm sure. And we proceeded to walk to the Sylvan Lake water slides, which had probably about an hour lineup out front. So we got into the line and the water slide managers came walking down the line. He's going, oh, hey guys, I'm sorry to tell you this. We can't let you in that apparel. Like that's just, it's not acceptable. We're family water slides. And we're like, hey, we wouldn't be showing up here if we didn't have a good reason. We're all Flames rookies. And this is what they have us doing for initiation. So we have to come here, get pictures with people in our Budweiser bikinis to prove to them that we did this, else we won't make the initiation. And he said, you guys are Calgary Flames. He goes, come with me. So we walked through this, our lineup took us right
kids
to the front.
Everywhere.
Kids, people everywhere. And he said to the lady up the front, he's like, these guys are good. These are Calgary Flames rookies. This is part of an initiation. I'm going to take care of them today. They don't have to pay. Let them in. And all the people in line started talking. So we must have, how many pictures did we take on the inside with people, families, kids that were like, oh, these guys are Calgary Flames rookies. Let's get our pictures with them. It was a funny thing to do. So we spent probably an hour and a half at the water slides. And then we started losing our buzz. So we thought, okay, well, let's go grab a drink. And it was a jazz festival because it was a long weekend Sunday. So it was jazz festival in Sylvan Lake. So we started walking down the street and there were beer tents everywhere. And wouldn't you know it, we're walking down the street and was it Brian Wilson that came up behind us and was like, Rob, Darcy?
Spilchen.
Rob, Darcy, what are you guys dressed up in bikinis for? So we kind of let him in on what was going on. They pulled us into the Budweiser, the big Budweiser jazz tent. It had a big bus there, didn't it?
Big Rig. Yeah.
The Bud Big Rig. So they pulled us up onto this big rig and he said, anything these guys are drinking today is on us. So we got into a couple of brewskis there. We got up on the rig and there's some pictures probably floating around of us on the Budweiser big rig in our bikinis. Yeah, I don't know if we need to find those pictures or not, but we took pictures on there, had a bunch of drinks there. And then we ended up meeting some girls that Darcy knew from Edmonton. And so they were drinking with us. And then I looked at my watch. I'm like, man, I got to open the bar because it was an industry night. I said, I got to be back in Calgary to open the bar in 45 minutes. And what is it, an hour and a half? Well, what is it to Sylvan Lake? Probably an hour. So I looked and I was like, I got to go open the bar. So we all piled back in my Jeep and then we convinced these girls to come back and we're going to party all night. It's a long weekend. You got to come down to the drink. It's going to be the best spot to be. So these girls followed us back and Darcy took off. I don't know where he went. The two other guys were gone. I think they went home and I went up to the office. I opened the bar and we showed up. There's about 20 people, our staff members, waiting outside to get in, to get ready to open this thing. I'm like, you guys got 15 minutes to open this place. You just get going. I went up, locked myself in the office, fell asleep. That was it. Those two girls were down there too, pissed off. They had to drive all the way back up to Edmonton. So
I'm going to say right now that if anyone listening to this happens to have been at Sylvan Lake that day and took photos with the Calgary Flames rookies, I will pay for those photos.
We look good. I know we did. We were working out.
Well, two of us did.
Those bikinis were filled right up, man. Like there was some serious gun shows coming.
I'm sure as much fun as you guys both had, there was also just as much getting into trouble. I want to hear about a specific incident that happened at Halloween. Can you fill in the listeners on this Halloween incident I've been told about?
Okay. So I'll set the scene. We're at the drink again, and Halloween on this year would have fallen on a Wednesday. We weren't typically open on a Wednesday. We were a Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and long weekends or Sunday bar. But we were going to be open for Halloween. It was kind of a no-brainer. So Mike Shea, the general manager at the time, kind of made a deal with us that if we packed the place on the Wednesday, Rennie Clinant and I would be able to have the night off, the Friday night off, to go party wherever we wanted. So the Bust Loose Pub Crawl came through on the Saturdays before that Wednesday, and we printed off thousands of tickets. And we said, we need to make sure that everyone comes through these doors on this pub crawl has to realize that this is going to be the best place to be on Halloween. So I said, we got to do something crazy. And I said, well, here, Rennie, why don't you jump off the second balcony? It was a two-tiered bar at the time, if you're familiar with it. It's what now is Rodney. So that second level, you could stand and watch the dance floor. And we told Rennie, get up on that railing and jump off. And he's like, you guys are fucked. There's no way I'm going to jump off that railing and stuff. I'm like, well, let's just practice and we'll catch you. So we had myself and another doorman and three other doormen, and we kind of crossed our hands like that fireman's catch. And so he jumped off the lower thing and we caught him no problem. Then he jumped off the higher one. And then finally he got right up on the railing and jumped off. So it looked awesome. So every time a pub call would come in, we would kick it off with Buck Cherry, and Rennie would stand up there and we'd have the spotlight on him and he'd jump off and swan dive into our arms and the crowd would go crazy. So we ended up anyway, that Wednesday we were packed. And so we had the night off, but that Wednesday, probably one of the best outfits I've ever seen. It was a headless horseman thing. So he was on a real horse riding around downtown in this headless horseman outfit. And you couldn't see his head. He kind of would peer through the shirt, and he pulled up to the side doors that we had at the drink. And he's like, he goes, I said, you know, it'd be really cool if you rode that horse through the bar, like come into the side doors and then roll out the back doors. And he was like, you'd let me do that? I'm like, yeah, it'd be awesome. It'd be so cool. There's so many people in there. They'll love it. So we had the light shining on him from the DJ booth. And we're like, hey guys, welcome down the Headless Horseman. And the horse walked in, came up the side steps into the side door. And we had tile floor.
It was waxed.
It was like a waxed. Yeah. Like a varnish.
Jeez.
A waxed varnish floor. So this horse got up into the room and it started to slip on the tile and it was kicking shit. And all of a sudden the horse fell on its side and there was tables, glassware, everything was fucking being kicked. We thought the horse was going to break its legs. And Vickers had shit on us at a management meeting saying, you guys pull another bonehead stunt like Rennie jumping off the balcony ever again, you're going to lose your job. So I'm shitting my pants. We have no idea what to do. I thought the horse was going to break its leg. Animal control would have to come in, shoot it. So we're freaking out. Girls are crying. People are running around the room trying to get out of the way of this horse. And so Rennie was smart enough. He ran up to the front co check and we had all these mats that we ended up throwing down on the ground. And the horse finally caught its footing. Everybody stood up and then walked out the doors again. And we looked around and it looked like a typhoon had hit the place. We reset the room. And then in the management meeting, Mike Joseph was like, what the hell is going on? You guys brought a horse into the thing. And I'm like, do you think we do that after that last stunt? I said, the horse got up on the two side stairs. We shone a light on it and then it walked out. So Mike Joseph, I'm sorry if you're hearing this for the first time. But yeah, it was a shit show.
I'm sitting here just dying, picturing this horse just kicking things and people running for their lives.
Do you remember that floor though? That floor might as well be covered in soap. That's the dumbest idea. There were some things I've done in my life. I wouldn't have let a horse in that bar. We couldn't even walk on the bloody thing.
Yeah, it was not good. It was terrible to see, to be honest with you.
That floor was absolutely horrible. You guys probably don't know this story, but a late night at Tantra the Drink, myself, to this day, now these guys can see this, I've got a scar on my collarbone because I slipped. I slipped on that floor. I was getting chased after hours. I don't know what was going on. And I slipped and I fell because that floor was so slippery and I smoked the bar. So I live with a scar today because of that floor. It's fucking crazy. Yeah, it's awesome that you bring that up.
If you like what you're hearing, please don't forget to give us a like or favorite and a 5-star review on your favorite streaming platform. It helps us out a ton and gives us better access to producing more great podcasts for our listeners. While you're at it, make sure to check out our Instagram at Last Call Confessions and give us a follow for all the up-to-date info on the podcasts.
Darcy, for you, Rob had touched base a little bit on Bust Loose Pub Crawls. Now you and I and share a ton of stories back in the day with these pub crawls, but for our listeners that don't know, maybe you can go into what a Bust Loose Pub Crawl was and touch base on the pylon parties that we used to throw.
Oh my God. I forgot about that. Okay. Bust Loose Pub Crawls back in the day, the way it used to roll is Bust Loose Holidays used to sell all of these Mexican vacations when people could travel, right? So there were kids going on US spring break, which is another story actually. So Bust Loose used to sell out these pub crawls, like these Halloween pub crawls. Literally, these kids would get up, you know, they'd hit the bar at about 11 a.m. and by about noon, these guys would be moving about 10,000, 15,000 people between about 10 bars. And the Halloween pub crawl was always sort of the biggest one next to the Stampede pub crawl. So of course, during the Calgary Stampede, it was even crazier because people are typically waking up still drunk, right? Because it's on the first Saturday. And we would see these clubs, we would see anywhere, we'd see five groups of 1,500 people. So the first group was always okay. You know, they're sort of getting warmed up. And as you get the second, third groups, it's like instant parties. You go from zero to hero. And I think I know the story you're referring to. Stampede, one of my first Stampedes, someone had decided that it was going to be a good idea after the first Friday of Stampede to go to the warehouse. We just had some energy to burn off. The warehouse was an after hours bar. So needless to say, I got out of the warehouse at about, the sun was coming up, and I realized that I had to be back for this pub crawl. I was in fine form. So I made it back, and we had the starting group, and someone came up to my office to wake me up. So I went downstairs and I went and hid in the DJ booth. And I was laughing with the DJ, Tim Miller, God bless him.
Oh, I love that guy.
So at one point, we thought it was a good idea to start encouraging people to bring back pylons for like a $2,000 cash prize. I don't know what the hell we were thinking. So as every pub crawl came through, 1,500 new people, we'd stop the music. We had a giant pylon, and we start telling everyone the story about how they need to profess to the pylon and know the pylon and be the pylon. I know this sounds crazy. Trust me. So we spent the entire hour basically indoctrinating these people that are smashed, saying, you got to bring back pylons, whatever you do. In your travels today, grab a pylon. Be a pylon. Bring a pylon back. The person that brings the most pylons back is going to win $2,000. Well, this happens all afternoon, and we're killing ourselves. Well, I go upstairs to my office, and I fall asleep because I'm tired. And then someone comes banging on my door at like 7 or 8 o'clock, and I think Erner was there or something. He's like, you got to get down here, man. We're in trouble. We don't know what to do. Like, this is crazy. It's bedlam. And I go down there, and the DJ booth is full of pylons. What's happening? So if you can picture thousands of people drinking throughout the city, being encouraged to steal sort of traffic cones and pylons, construction sites were getting rampaged. People were jumping out of buses, grabbing pylons. I don't know how many pylons we ended up with. It was a real eye-opener, I'll tell you that. We had pylons for years. I remember that when I thought we were out of the water, you know, thinking we don't have to give away this prize, and Tim goes, oh, you're done. And this kid comes around the corner, and he had like 50 pylons stacked, and he's walking through the crowd, and I just wanted to cry. I had a paycheck deduction literally for 2 months on that one because I gave away the money. And I remember getting hauled in the office going, we don't even know what to say about this, but you owe us $2,000. So I don't know if I hit the story, Dave, but it was.
That is the story I was looking for. That was probably 20 years ago. And we still have some of those pylons in storage. We still have that. Awesome. It was absolutely
I want some
priceless.
Of those back. I've got a race company now. Those suckers are expensive.
They're all yours, Darcy. They are all yours. Now, our local CFL team, the Calgary Stampeders, have got 8 Grey Cups under their belt. All 4 of us have had the opportunity to drink with the cup. We've partied with the cup, maybe even slept with the cup. You know, maybe Rob, you want to touch base on this, a possible night where you guys were good Samaritans with the Grey Cup.
I just want to stop this for 1 second, Rob. Is this the first time that we've ever fessed this story publicly? I've never told anyone the story.
Yeah, I know. I didn't know if there was some implications that would arise from this story, but I think we're prepared. We're going to do it. This is the first time publicly.
The Stamps don't know where I live, so.
CFL doesn't know anything about this until now. CFL, yeah, the Stampeders, love the Stampeders, such a great team for the city. They had won the Grey Cup, and they were doing a little tour around with the cup, and they one of their stops was the drink. So they came in, we had the DJ announce that the Grey Cup was here. Everyone cheered, and the guys were partying, and you know, we had lights, people were taking some pictures with it. And it got to a point where one of the players had asked, he said, hey, do you mind if we put this in a safe place? And I said, well, we'll throw it up in the management office. Come find me when you guys want it to take off, and we'll make sure it stays safe up there. And Darcy rolls in. We weren't allowed to work. We got separated. Darcy and I got separated. Paul figured it was a good idea before we killed each other. Not out of lack of love, but for other reasons. And so Darcy rolls up, and I said, hey, you got to come check this out. So we walked upstairs to the office. I said, the Grey Cup's in here. And he's like, what? He goes, well, we got to take this thing on a tour. And so I was like, what? Yeah. He goes, let's take it and let's go around. Let's hit the city. So we grabbed the Grey Cup, snuck out the back door, ran over to the side. Cabs used to line up along the sides when there's cabs lining up. And Darcy and I jumped into the cab with the Grey Cup, and we We took it on a city tour. I think the first stop was the Palace at the time. We rolled into there and every place we walked into, everyone was freaking out. And we were doing drinks out of it, shots out of it, getting pictures with people. So we took it to, how many spots would you say, Darce?
3 or 4. We were celebrating. Yeah, I mean, we were just proud Stamps fans, I think.
Got to a point where we're like, we better get back to work. I was working at the time. So we rolled in, once again, snuck up the back so no one saw us with it and put it back in the office. And when I walked down to the bar, everyone's freaking out. They're like, well, we've been looking for you for the last hour. Where the hell have you been? And I'm like, oh, just doing a little tour and making sure everything was okay. And so they're like, the Stamps are freaking out. No one knows where the Grey Cup is. I was like, well, it's up in the office. So the players came over. I walked up to the office and he's like, oh man, we're freaking out. Open up the door and there's the Grey Cup sitting there. And they were like, they're like, oh, phew, man, we would have got killed if we lost that thing. Anyway, no harm done. We had a great time. We represented well, Darcy. Had a great time and showed off the cup we were the people. It was the People's Cup that night.
It was the People's Cup. I agree. We were super fans, and thank God there was no social media back in that day.
Rob, you brought this up, and I don't know if I'm jumping ahead of ourselves. You're talking about the People's Cup. What about the People's Champion?
Oh man, I love it. I love it. WWE comes to town, and Darcy calls me, and he's like, I got dressed up as The Rock because that's what I used to do. Got a picture. Maybe I'll post that picture for you guys to see what the similarities were, because there were some similarities. So Darcy calls me and I'm in all dressed up as The Rock. I had a fake tattoo done. He calls me, goes, you wouldn't believe who's down at the Chop House with me right now. And I was like, who? And he goes, The Rock. And I was like, holy crap, hold him there. I'll be right down. So I rolled down dressed up and I walked into the Chop House, Chicago Chop House at the time. And I said, someone tells me someone's dressed up like The Rock. So he turns around and he was actually sitting with Rock, if I'm getting you in trouble here. He was actually sitting with a mutual friend. He said, oh, I've heard about you. So I guess she was telling him that I actually dressed up like him. I said, hey, when you get a chance, I don't want to interrupt right now, but if I could get some pictures with you after. And he said, absolutely. Guy was just a gem. One of the nicest guys, most humble guys I've ever met. And big as a house, hey, Darce? Like, the guy towered over us. So we got a bunch of pictures with The Rock that night. And it was kind of a bucket list thing. I saw him a little bit later on at Sky Bar when we opened in Vancouver. And he was filming out there. And that was a fun night as well. Great opportunity to meet a lot of good people, though. So
now, speaking of WWE, I've heard you guys used to pull stunts, printing VIP lanyards to get into events, shows, all that kind of stuff. Pretend you work for magazines. But I hear that you managed to get front row seats to WWE. How did that happen?
That was a spirit of opportunity. Right? We didn't plan that. We just looked that great that we were literally, I mean, Rob, I don't know. They pulled us in. I'll let Rob tell the story for the most part. They pulled us in, thought we were part of the show, and realized when it was just a little too late that we weren't. Well, that's literally the background of it, right?
Yeah, so WWE comes to Calgary, and I thought, oh, man. One of my friends worked at with the Calgary Flames, and she said, I'll get you front row tickets. How many do you need? And I said, well, 4. So it was Darcy, myself. Who was it again? Mano again? And someone else, I can't remember who's there with us. Anyway, so I decided to get dressed up as China. But I was calling myself Taiwan, China's little sister. So I got dressed up as the female wrestler, the whole deal, makeup, everything. And we showed up and I had this big sign, China's long lost sister, Taiwan. That I was going to hold up because WWE's there. It was filming. It was going to be on TV. And we get there and the girl that was supposed to get the tickets for us was kind of acting a little bit weird. And I was like, hey, can we get those tickets? We want to head down there right now and have a couple drinks before the show starts. And she's looking nervous. And I said, you have the tickets, don't you? And she's like, well, no, we bought nosebleeds and she was just going to take us down there with those tickets. She's like, I couldn't get the tickets. So I was like, what? Why didn't you tell us? We would have bought them. So she goes, well, come with me. So we walk down with the security group and we get down to the floor and they're like, do you guys have your tickets? And he's looking at us and he goes, hey, are you with the show? And he looks at me and I was like, would I be dressed like this if I wasn't with the show? And he's like, okay, come this way. So I'm looking at Darcy. We have no idea. I don't know what's going on, but just go along with it, right? And man, I was freaking out. We're all looking at each other, kind of a bunch of little schoolgirls getting so excited. And we get up to the spot and he's like, well, he goes, we don't have any chairs for you. And I was like, well, does someone want to explain this to someone else? Like when they tell us that you don't have chairs that you're supposed to have ready for us. And he goes, don't worry, we'll go grab some. So they made this whole row. They made this whole row for us right at the front. And we had no idea what was going on. We're like, man, why the hell are they doing this? And about halfway through the show, right down the row that we're sitting in, this wrestler comes running in, jumps the barrier, jumps in the into the ring, does a drop kick on the guy, runs out the other side. I'm like, holy shit. They thought that I was supposed to be that guy. So yeah, we're laughing, spent the whole time up there. All the wrestlers that came out, they'd look over at me, just shake their head. It was a fun-filled night. And then at the end, we were walking past the security guy and he looked at us and goes, you guys aren't with the show, were you? And we all went, no, thanks for the chairs. So yeah, it was a fun night. I think actually, my mom was like, I think I saw you on TV. Were you dressed up like a girl at this wrestling show? And I was like, yeah, that was me. So just another get up.
You guys have so many crazy stories of you getting in places based on people thinking that you're someone else. You've got now Flames Rookies. You toured with the Grey Cup. People thought you were Stampeders. And now they thought you were part of a WWE show.
Yeah.
Like,
so much fun.
Oh, man. It's unreal. So Darcy, I know over the years, you guys have met a ton of people, hosted a lot of celebrities, athletes, musicians. I remember you getting photos with your puppy and Steven Tyler.
Holy shit. Yeah, I remember that. I just got a puppy, a pug puppy named Stevie, the best. And they were doing meet and greets somewhere in the trailer. And I was walking by and Dave came out and he goes, hey, you want to meet Steven Tyler? Like, who wouldn't want to meet Steven Tyler, right?
Yeah.
But I had my dog. I was like, well, this is awkward. So I left the dog out there and I was torn. I was like, well, I mean, it's my dog, right? So I go out there and he could see that I was a little bit distraught. And he said, what's up? I said, oh, I just got a puppy out there. He's like, bring the puppy in. So we brought the puppy in and Phoebe the pug and Steven Tyler hit it off and she was necking with him. And I mean, it was super cool. I don't know. I mean, there's literally so many of those, so many meet and greets. I couldn't even, I'd say the first biggest celeb that I probably hung out with was Snoop Dogg. And he is who he is, right? You see everything on TV. That guy doesn't put on an act, right? I mean, that was super cool. I'm going to the next day. After a Snoop Dogg concert, I was in the office with Shane Seaman and it was at
Kaylee's. Oh, jeez.
Yeah. And I remember we're at Kaylee's and we're about to order food. And it was after the first or second Snoop Dogg concert and the door gets kicked in. And this guy's banging on the door and he kicks the door in. And Shane and I, you got a picture. We're like these skinny little guys sitting there eating our like Irish box teas. And this big guy walks in and he's got a gun on his hip. And it was one of Snoop Dogg's bodyguards and he was not happy. And we just like food is falling out of my mouth. I thought I'm going to die. I don't know why I'm going to die. This guy's upset. As it turned out, there was a party that someone had hosted in a hotel. And a bunch of the girls from the club went there and a bunch of customers and it was a melee. Anyways, Snoop woke up and his $50,000 gold chain was gone and his Flames jersey was gone. And I guess he was a little more pissed off about the $50,000 chain than he was the Flames jersey. So I remember this guy was just yelling and Seaman had just had some one-liners for him. And we were both trying to not really laugh. Like I was scared for my life, but laughing at the same time, he was so upset. And as it turned out, based on the description that he gave, which could have been a million, somehow we were able to, yeah, that sounds like so-and-so. So we went from almost getting murdered by this guy to making some phone calls and the $50,000 gold chain was brought back. I think we told him they were holding Shane ransom. I'm not quite sure. Shane for ransom. We kidnapped him, but it was the sort of other side of it.
Darcy, is it true that limos used to be your guys' preferred method of transportation? And how did you swing that? Where all did you guys take these things?
Which city are you referring to? So when I was younger, I was living with Dave. And the company we were working for, of course, had 5 or 6 nightclubs, and they owned a limousine company. So Dave and I, of course, became friends with all the limo drivers and the limo dispatcher. And there were limos running every night, literally every night of the week. There was always something going on. So there were always limos circulating the city. So it was just one of these things where when Dave and I wanted to go out, we'd just call one of the limos that would be circling by. And we'd have limos picking us up. I don't think I drove for a year. I mean, it sounds super sort of pretentious, hey, but that's literally how we got around Edmonton.
Hey, Darcy, why don't you tell them the deal with Molson that you negotiated for a limo?
Oh, I like how I just took the fall for this one. Okay, yeah, this is great. So we were running, yeah, we were at Cowboys, and we were doing some really big keg volume. We used to sell draft for 25 cents a glass. It was over the top. You couldn't get near the place at 6 o'clock, you know, it was lined up down the street. So this is the go-to place, and we were pumping out big volume. And at the time, Rob and I were working together, and there was this really cool beer rep that we liked. He was a cool guy. And he came in, and I don't know if he had just broken up with his wife or whatnot, but he's talking to Rob and I. He basically throws it at us. Hey man, can you guys do me a solid? I gotta get my keg numbers up. And we had no responsibility for ordering it all. Like, we gotta get our keg numbers up. You know, I gotta hit this bonus. Can you help me out? Rob and I saw no problem with that. We're like, yeah, of course. He's like, you know, like, I'll take you guys skiing. Yeah, whatever. So we had switched the keg accounts over to this guy's company without telling anybody. We just did it. We just thought it was a nice thing to do. Of course, we also knew that we were going to be looked after, I guess. So from that point forward, there were a number of ski trips with limos. There was a number of ski trips. There were a number of lift tickets. This is how many lift tickets we had, okay? I'm going to put this in the perspective for you, okay? I don't know if any of you know this story. So we used to go skiing every Sunday. Rob and I used to go snowboarding or skiing, whatever, religiously, no sleep, we'd go. And we decided that we were gonna do a staff skis trip. So we booked this bus, this big Greyhound, right? Like a huge bus, it's gonna hold 50, 60 people. Well, for some reason, I'm not going on the trip. Probably because, you know, I probably had too much fun the week before. I wasn't gonna go. Rob's hosting this staff trip, okay? So remember, I said, we got more lift tickets than you could shake a stick at. So it is, I wanna say 8 a.m. I'm sleeping.
Yeah.
I'm sleeping, and all of a sudden in my house, now, I was living up in the house right by West Hills there, Dave, right up in Patterson. Nicer area, quiet, right? So I'm sleeping. The doorbell starts ringing. Someone's banging on the door. I think we're getting raided. I don't know what the hell's going on. I get up, you know, I run downstairs and I see, and there's this freaking big afro in the, I go, what's going on? And I open the door and there's Swiderski. Afro, no shirt on, see-through pants, you know, go, and these big ski goggles. He goes, hey man. I go, man, I told you I can't go on this ski trip. He goes, no, we got an issue. And I look over, and this Greyhound bus looks like the National Lampoon scene, right? People are hanging out, it's shaking, people are doing everything. He leans into me, he goes, I lost the lift tickets. I go, what do you mean? He goes, I lost the lift tickets. I go, what the hell did you do with them? He goes, I don't know. So they're on their way to the mountains. He's got 50 or 60 staff members. He's got no lift tickets for him. And without a beat, I'm like, yeah, hang on. Don't worry about it. I remember I just ran upstairs, grabbed another book. So another $6,000 in lift tickets, threw them at him and said, don't fucking lose them this time.
Oh, man.
And off he went. And we forgot about it. I forgot about it until like the next year we were talking. I'm like, I can't believe I just gave you $6,000 in lift tickets. And neither of us would be like, eh, whatever. So that's what happens when you change a few kegs, folks. You know, you look after some people.
Well, we went up. He took us up to the ski hill that weekend in a limo. We had the most extravagant lunch, like filet mignon. Remember in the red bottles of wine, like $200 a bottle, like, you know, which is decent for a ski hill. And had a limo ride back to Senior Frogs that night. And it was all on them. I think we even got apparel, did we not? We got jackets. And then
it took about a month, and then we got hauled in the office.
Oh, I know. Oh, the statement came back, and they're like, what the hell were you guys exchanging
Yeah.
Kegs are
why did this keg volume go up and what happened to the other ones? And they brought us in the office and they're pissed straight off, expecting Rob and I to be scared, and we both burst out laughing. We couldn't believe it. We couldn't believe we were getting shit for this.
Yeah.
But we're helping everybody serious, I guess. We didn't know. Very young.
I love it. Switching gears here, you guys. Now, I'm shocked that anybody ever let the three of us travel together. We've been all over the world, Mexico, Vegas, Miami, LA. You know, Rob, why don't you tell us about those road trips?
Yeah, we, you know what? It was always such a great time. You know, that's a time I really valued with Penny Lane Entertainment, the way that Paul and the PLE family, the way that he took care of us on, you know, just going out, and it was to check out other concepts, to build culture within the business. And you know what, like going to Vegas and getting VIP treatment, like walking into 1,000 person clubs, and you know, we had a personal bodyguard, this massive Samoan guy that was, you know, he'd walk up to the front of the line, and there's like probably a 5-hour line. They'd pay the cover charge for us. We'd head into the club, private bottle service areas. You know, the one time we were at the Ghost Bar partying with the Pussycat Dolls and Jerome Bettis. It was the year that he won MVP for the NFL. He came walking over and he was like, "Y'all mind if I party in your VIP suite? It looks like you guys are having so much fun." I was like, "The bus, get in here." Just and the dinners that we would go to. I remember Paul ordering like $3,000 bottles of wine to cleanse our palate, and you know, just the number one rated restaurant in America at the time, the Napa restaurant. You know, so the culture that you get from that, and the things that you're able to see by working with that organization, was just unbelievable. And it was, you know, I've been to 2 Super Bowls, Miami, South Beach, Miami. Yeah, the Super Bowls. You tell me that, I'll tell that story sometime. You know, Vegas, just so many really, really cool places. So it was really fortunate to be part of something like that.
I had the opportunity to go to the Olympics in Salt Lake City in 2002 with Darcy here. You know, we had the opportunity to go to a bunch of games. We stayed up in Park City, got to see Salt Lake City and see what the city was about. We were always dressed in our Team Canada gear, in cowboy hats and cowboys or Canada sweatshirts. We walked around the city. People thought we were actually the hockey team and were asking us for autographs everywhere we went. But Darce, we were at the gold medal game against USA. It was Canada versus USA. Why don't you take it from here?
Yeah, we went down there on that guy's private jet. I remember that one. Remember we landed, so you couldn't, this was right after 9/11, you couldn't fly directly into Salt Lake. So if you're on a private jet, you had to land at another airport, and you actually got the plane checked by, like, I don't know, the military. So we had to land somewhere, and I remember looking out the window, and the plane was surrounded by about 15 guards with giant AK-47s. And they bring you off the plane one by one. So it was a different time at that point. But when we finally got to Salt Lake, we didn't know what to expect. And it was over the top awesome. Just like Dave said, it was crazy. But we're at the gold medal game and security's so tight. We get up there and we have these tickets for the skybox. And we're going up the stairs and we notice the further up the stairs we go, there's more guys with these little headphones in, and we start to realize it's the Secret Service. They're peppered in this whole Sky Suite area. And we know this because, let's call a spade a spade. This is day 5 for us. We've had a couple wobbly pops, right? All day. We're half in it already. It's 2 in the afternoon. We all got white cowboy hats on, Team Canada. We're all wearing giant cowbells, you know, because I guess that's what we do. So we're walking around, and Secret Service is sort of, you can see they're sort of pointing at us, having some fun. We can hear him sort of making fun of the accent a few times, and we're kind of chuckling, but we don't want to do anything too stupid because these guys have guns, right? So we sit down in the suite, and we get to the suite, and there's this huge box, and I don't know, there's 6 of us there, and someone starts handing out the tickets, And I remember someone handed me the ticket and the guys were sort of chuckling because I was a late guy in or something. So these guys are all sitting beside each other and they stuffed me to the end of the suite, front row of the suite, way to the end. And they're kind of waving at me. And I was sitting there and I had my beers in front of me. And I was kind of like a little bit distraught, but didn't really care. And all of a sudden, like I'm looking at the guys and I don't know, we're sort of exchanging. One of their faces goes white. And then the other, he nudges another guy, nudges the other guy. And I'm looking at him and they're all looking at me. And I'm sitting right on the edge of the suite, okay? And I look at him and I look to my left, I look to my right. Sitting 2 feet away from me on this little pony wall, on the other side of the pony wall, is Dick Cheney, the vice president of the United States. So I look over and I realize that and I got my beer in my hand. I turn over to the guys and I go, fuck you, fellas. And I turned around, I put my beer down. I had a little chat with the vice pres. We were pretty tight at that point. He asked me where I was from. Told him we were all having a good time. I was doing my best to really sort of keep it together. You know, I'd taken my cowboy hat off to greet him like he was a prince or something. And there was Secret Service right on top of me. So the game starts. And, you know, everybody's having fun. And he said to me, he said, good luck in the game, son. And I said, yes, sir, Vice President. I don't know how to address it. I go, yes, sir, you too. And I'm sitting there and I'm looking over. You could just see these guys are scowling, eh? Now I'm just like loving this. I'm sitting next to one of the second most powerful men in the world. Well, 5 minutes into the game or something, we get the first goal. So it was all bets off at that point, right? We're up, beers are up, beers are flying, cowbells are going off, cowboy hats are flying. You think we just won the goddamn Stanley Cup? I totally forgot this guy was right next to me. Just shit is hitting the fan. And we're high-fiving, hugging, and finally, this is like maybe 25 seconds later, not long. I go, because I think I'm going to fist bump the VP. He's gone. Secret Service have yanked him out of the box. They moved him 3 boxes over. They totally cleared the suite. They wanted nothing to do with us,
which we thought was
fun. And then we absolutely kicked their ass in that game. So that was really cool. We never saw him again, though. He never wrote. He never came by and said, hey, good game, sir. Really happy you won. I was kind of disappointed in him, but...
I think he tried to. Your security's probably pretty tight, Darcy. You might not have been able to get through it.
It sounds like over the years, there were definitely some nights that turned into an absolute dumpster fire with you guys. Did you ever just go and grab the fire extinguishers?
The one time I did grab a fire extinguisher, we were hosting a bachelor auction at the original Cowboys. And we had had, you know, there was people from the services, like the police service. We had firemen and stuff, and we were short a bachelor, and the girl running it came up and said, hey, you know what, would you mind going in? I was single at the time. Well, I think I was. I was single at the time, and I said, yeah, for sure, I'll go in. We were raising money for the Make-A-Wish Foundation, I think, or something like that, and so I said, well, I don't really have any costumes here. And one of the firefighter guys said, you know what, I'll lend you my outfit if you want to wear that. Meanwhile, I had shit canned a couple shots of tequila for some liquid courage, because we were walking out on this ramp and they were announcing us. And I thought, you know, it would be really cool. You know, I've seen Mick Mars and Nikki Six and Tommy Lee all, you know, spray fire extinguishers at Motley Crue concerts. And I thought, what a great idea, you know, I'll come out with this fire extinguisher and I'll just spray it all over the crowd. Little did I know that there's different types of fire extinguishers. And this one was a CO2 charge. So what it essentially does is it pulls all the CO2 out of the air to help stop the flames. So not a good idea when you're on stage and you're spraying it in the crowd. Well, people lose all the oxygen around them and you start to choke. And, you know, I'm up on stage gasping and I can see the whole front rows of all this. These people were down for this charity auction thing, running out of the building. Because I've discharged this CO2 canister, not a good time. Not very fun. Don't discharge extinguishers.
I think we've all discharged extinguishers inside nightclubs.
Yeah. I've had fire extinguisher wars after hours that completely peppered an entire nightclub with a white film. But I was on the hook for the cleaning bill for, of course. So that was really great.
What about your needle in a haystack, Darce? Talking about clearing rooms.
This is a good one. Okay. So back in the day, we were always trying to come up with these large scale sort of promos. And I don't know, we had this idea to do this whole needle in a haystack, but it was basically find a diamond in a haystack. And the general premise was we were gonna invite 50 finalists back on a ladies' night, and we were gonna put a $15,000 or $20,000 diamond ring inside a pile of like straw or hay. And then the women were just gonna run and try to find this thing. Sounds like a great idea, right? Well, the wheels came off this thing quite early. So we were supposed to have 50 finalists on a Wednesday. We ended up getting 200 finalists because I think I had just told the girl, phone everybody. So we had 200 women show up that were finalists. So that was great, but it was a little bit of organized chaos. The other thing was we went and got so many bales of hay. What happened was we stacked the bales of hay in the middle of the dance floor. Like you couldn't even get onto the dance floor. And what we did is as we stacked them, we just took the strings off the hay. So as the girls ran into the hay, thought they were going to be climbing it, everything would just explode. So that was the second strike. The third strike was just before we're about to open, I'm standing in the DJ booth with Tim Miller. And he said to me, he goes, all right. He comes up, he's excited. He goes, check this out. And he opens this box and he shows his little candy ring. I'm like, what the hell is that? He goes, well, this is the fake ring. I go, what do we need a fake ring for? He goes, well, we gotta put it in the hay. And I looked at him, I'm like, oh shit. He's like, you didn't. He goes, you put the ring in the box, the actual ring in there. I go, well, I didn't use the box. It said needle in a haystack. So I threw the actual $20,000 diamond ring in there as we were stacking the hay. I didn't tell anybody. So Tim's like, do you have any idea how hard this thing's going to be? This thing's going to be fine. I'm like, okay. So we're both killing ourselves. And now I'm getting anxiety going, oh my God, what did I do? And like media showing up, city TV showing up. Everyone's there. There's 200 women there. It's a near riot. So basically it's this count of three and we let 200 women run to the middle of the dance floor and they think they basically explode. Like I want to say 30 bales of hay all explode at once. So who would have thought that bales of hay would have sent, you know, dust and straw and all this sort of stuff into the air? You want to clear a room fast? We had 500 people exit that room within 30 seconds. We had women crying. We had staff members with hives all over the face. The HVAC system needed to be cleared out. The TV, city TV was killing themselves. Their cameraman had to leave. You couldn't breathe. We emptied the nightclub. And we're outside and it's pure chaos. And I'm like, holy shit, no one's found the ring yet. So women had to go back in there. Like it was like Armageddon. And it took about half an hour, I think. And someone finally found the ring. And when they found that ring, we'd never been so happy, man. But it was a slow cleanup. It was a great promotion. It was a near disaster. People had hives on their faces. I don't know what sales were that night. Someone should have walked out in handcuffs for sure. But thank God we didn't. Anyway, someone found the ring. Everything was fine. It wasn't damaged. No one died. And HVAC Perfect. System got cleaned out. And we went on. And I didn't do that again.
Dear Last Call Confessions, this one night when I was out partying, well, you get the idea. If you're listening and thinking to yourself that you have some crazy stories you would love to share, make sure to send us a DM at Last Call Confessions on Instagram. And your story could be featured on our new Dear Last Call Confessions segment in an upcoming episode. If you know your story needs to be heard but would rather not take the credit, don't worry. We're fine with keeping it anonymous too. What are you guys up to these days? And how can someone who's been listening to the show show you guys some love, follow you, and support what ventures you guys are working on right now?
Yeah, man. Like I talked about at the start in my bio, this is a pivotal time for me. I'm craft will always be in my blood. It's a restaurant that I'm super proud of. And I wish PJ and the rest of the crew nothing but a complete success. So if you can go out and support the local restaurant scene, craft beer market, but also stay tuned. I'm getting into the mushroom business. You know, it's going to gourmet, medicinal, and then potentially psychedelic. So when you see the brands, I'm going to start posting some stuff on Instagram as we get closer. We're working with Blackwater right now to create our logo, brand identity, and a pitch deck and stuff. And we'll be live sometime in July and August. And we're looking to get people healthy, man. Like it's a big shift for me. And there's just a lot of really good positives to create a legacy for my three boys to follow in. So when you see that company up, support local as much as possible. There's a lot of there's a lot of great restaurants in the city and in Calgary that need people's support right now. So,
and for the time being, I don't know if you want people to follow you on your personal social media or not.
Yeah, you can currently follow me at Aleluminati. Aleluminati, A-L-E, Aleluminati, I don't know, whatever it is, Aleluminati. Follow me under Rob Swiderski, Facebook and or Instagram, and I'm going to start planting some stuff. I'm going to become a mushroom guru.
Awesome. Darcy, how about you? What can someone do to show you some love?
I'm just so happy to be here with you guys. you know, I can't emphasize that that enough. Just like Rob said, you know, supporting us, my dog, great. Supporting local restaurants and gyms these days, that's really important. I know that it's a lot of wonderful people that work in the hospitality industry, and we're hoping to get everyone back to work. So, I mean, that certainly hits close home to me. Personally, I've taken much of the similar path. So, I have a race company, and we host trail runs and obstacle course races, and we got into ultra marathons. Yeah. So the company is called X Warrior. We've been doing events the last 3-4 years. Of course, the pandemic certainly has affected that business. We are doing some virtual events, but I would say for anyone out there, just make sure that they're looking after their health. And if you wanted to basically get off the couch and maybe come and try some cool events, follow us at xwarriorchallenge.com, or you can follow me personally. But I would just say, look after your health. And when you're ready to get active, give me a call. We can certainly get you out there. We'll do some push-ups with Rob, I think.
On the course.
Yeah, you got it.
There you have it, folks. You've heard from our good friends, Rob Swiderski and Darcy Shalafu. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you guys here on Last Call Confessions, and we're looking forward to having you guys back. Thanks.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Dave and Austin.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Last Call Confessions. It would mean the world to us if you could make sure to give us a 5-star rating and a review on your favorite podcast streaming platform, as well as give our Instagram page at Last Call Confessions a follow. Don't forget, if you have a great party story you know we need to hear, make sure to DM us for the chance to have your story featured on an upcoming episode.